This morning, I'm so excited. I've been looking forward to this for weeks now. We're going to be hearing from a very dear friend of mine. Her name is Joyce Del Rosario. Joyce is a Seattle native, but right now she's done a lot. But right now, what she's currently giving her life to is her PhD studies. She's a PhD student at Fuller Seminary. And so Joyce is coming and we just want to welcome her with a warm welcome that is ours to do and to give this morning. So, Joyce, will you come?
Good morning. It is so good to be here this morning. It is Husky homecoming weekend, and I was sad I missed the game and some sailgating that some of my friends are doing, but this is a homecoming for me as well. This weekend has been so good to connect back with old friends and family, really, Lena included, and so I am thankful and grateful to be here. Actually, I didn't plan on saying this, but I'm hit with the circle. I grew up in a United Methodist Church on Beacon Hill, and a Filipino United Methodist Church. And I didn't, while we ordained women as well, I didn't grow up with women preaching. And Lena was one of the first ones that I remember seeing preach the word. And she was the one that modeled it for me. She's the one that made a way for me. And so I'm particularly humbled at this moment to get to be here and share the word with you. Thank you, Lena. Okay. That aside. So I am Filipino American. I was born in LA, raised here in Seattle, went to University of Washington. I've spent the last 3 years, I'm in my fourth year now at Fuller Seminary, working on a degree in intercultural studies. And in our program, the way that we do our program is that you come into it with a question. And so they assume that you've been doing ministry. It's required. They say, okay, from the day one, we want you to have one question that you're going to live with for the next 5 years. So I've asked myself one question over these years. And basically what I've been doing is looking at Mary, Mother of Jesus, and how she relates to women in the margins, particularly women like teen moms. So when I was in East Palo Alto and in the San Francisco Bay Area, I ran a home for teen moms. And I saw the way we had a lot of churches around us that supported us. And you know, I would meet with, you know, an executive from Netflix on the same day that I would meet with, you know, a young woman, you know, on government assistance, and that would just be a normal day for me. And I thought, there's got to be something else that we can do in the church. We've got to look at them differently, because I believe that God looks at marginalized women like teenage mothers very differently. And so that's what my work has been. Now, I've been looking at Mary, Mother of Jesus, because she was a teenage mom, right? And growing up Filipino, I'm one of those weird Filipinos that didn't grow up Catholic. And so I actually knew nothing about Mary when I started this research. I'm a little bit embarrassed about how little I knew about Mary. I didn't even know, you know, I didn't know what, you know, really the Annunciation or the perpetual virginity or all these kind of terms about Mary, because we just didn't grow up hearing that in the church. And so for those of you who have been raised Catholic, I'm going to be sharing some things about Mary, and I know you can probably teach me a lot more, so I welcome that afterwards. For those of you who were raised Protestant like me, maybe we can discover something new about Mary this morning, because normally we save her for Christmas. So I'm going to preempt it a little bit. I'm going to be like, you know, like do Christmas before Halloween like all the stores do. We're going to do that this morning. So I believe that you're in the middle of a series called Interrupting Silence. And when I thought about this theme, I thought about Mary's song, popularly known as the Magnificat. And why don't I go ahead and read it for us this morning? We're going to be in Luke 1:44 or 46 to 55. My soul glorifies the Lord, and my spirit rejoices in God my Savior, for he has been mindful of the humble state of his servant. From now on, generations will call me blessed, for the Mighty One has done great things for me. Holy is his name. His mercy extends to those who fear him from generation to generation. He has performed mighty deeds with his arm. He has scattered those who are proud in their inmost thoughts. He has brought down rulers from their throne, but he has lifted up the humble. He has filled the hungry with good things, but has sent away the rich empty. He has helped his servant Israel, remembering to be merciful to Abraham and his descendants forever, even as he said to our fathers. This is the word of the Lord. So if I were to bust out in song right now, I'd be interrupting some silence. I would be interrupting some peace in your ear, because I'm going to be honest, I can't sing. I'm not really that good. I'm real flat. And secondly, I'd be interrupting your expectations, right? Because you're expecting me to speak. But if I started to sing, right, I was watching Lena worship this. I mean, she was the one in front of me. And so I was like, oh, man, I wish I could sing like Lena. But I can't. And so and if I started to sing right now, I would interrupt expectations. This is what Mary did. She interrupted expectations with her song. It was a song that I believe interrupted the silence of the night, holy night. A song that interrupted the role of women in the first century. It was a song of power and prophecy embodied in a young teenage girl. A song that interrupted the method in which the Jews believed that the Messiah would come. And a song that prophetically interrupted the status quo with the declaration of justice for the oppressed. Some scholars debate whether, you know, this song was really Mary sang it or not. But you know what? Luke, or the author of Luke, decided to put it together to Mary. So we're going to go look at it today as if Mary did in fact sing this song. And before we get into the scripture, I wanted to unpack some things, because we don't know a lot about Mary by the scripture. There's not a lot said about her. And so let me help paint a picture for us this morning. I spent some time studying what it was like for first century women. What was it like for them in Palestine? What was it like for them in the Greco-Roman world where Mary lived? And so I looked at the what they call the household codes. This is the way of life for the families in the first century. Girls were given to marriage just before they would start their menstrual cycle. And so I can't really tell by their, you know, nutrition and development at that time, but we know she's pretty young. Maybe she was around 12, maybe 14, again, depending on the development of that time. But the reason why they would do this, they would marry off the girl so young, is so that they could ensure that the bride was a virgin. Also because infant mortality rate was high. So in order to have as many kids as possible, they wanted to start having kids as soon as possible. So as soon as the girl was able to have children, that's when they wanted to start having children. And so they would marry the girls just before they were biologically ready to have children. This was because it would ensure, you know, if infant mortality rate is high and you're not sure how many of your children will live, you wanted to kind of make it as good as possible for your estate, for your family lineage to go on. So you wanted to make sure that you had as many possibilities of children to hand your name to, your estate to. Particularly the boys. They really wanted boys. Also, in the first century, because of that, girls did not have very much value. When they were born, often the parents would not attach to the children very much because they weren't quite sure how long the child would stay alive, right? And I want to be careful here because I know that there's some brothers and sisters here who may have gone through the pain of losing a little one, maybe through miscarriage or whatever. But there's such pain in that, and I don't think that was different in the first century. I think the pain is still the same when you lose a child. And so what would happen, because this was a common practice for them, they would stay disattached to their children until they were sure that they would be able to stay alive. Even more so for the girls. Because, see, the sons would be able to stay in the family, but the girls in a few short years would be married off to someone else. And so sometimes the parents didn't connect with their daughters at all. This is the world that Mary lived in. So according to Protestant traditions, Mary probably didn't come from a very rich family. There was nothing immediately special about her. Before she was known as the mother of Jesus, she was just Mary. Luke points out that Joseph was the descendant of David. He said nothing of Mary's lineage. She didn't matter as much. And so she was this young woman with little value, no title, no status to speak of. And yet she was chosen to be the one to interrupt the silence. It seems unexpected that the God of the universe would choose to enter into humanity through this young, insignificant girl. And yet the angel Gabriel came to her and said, "Greetings, you who are highly favored, the Lord is with you." Before she did a thing, before she answered the angel, before she had the baby, before she got the degree, before she got the job, before she said yes, before she got married, before she was known, she was highly favored. And not only highly favored, but the Lord was already with her. While she was still an unexpected choice to be the Theotokos or the God-bearer, the Lord was already with her. But you know, Mary didn't really get that. If we read through the passage in Luke, Mary was greatly troubled by the words and wondered what kind of greeting this might be. The New Testament and womanist scholar Stephanie Buckingham points out, Mary didn't answer back to the angel like, "I know, I've been saying that. I am God's favorite," right? She didn't say that. Instead, Mary was like, "Who, me? Mary, like, I'm like the Mary at 532 Nazareth Street. Are you sure? Are you, that, you know, there's a lot of Marys in the Bible. Me? Why her?" She was an unexpected choice for anything that the angel was about to say to her. And yet the angel said a second time, because she was having such a hard time believing, "Don't be afraid, you have found favor with God." The angel basically told her, "I know I'm speaking to the right person. You have been handpicked by God, by the God of the universe, for a kingdom-changing assignment. Yes, you, baby girl, you are God's favorite." Brothers and sisters, we're unexpected. If you didn't know already, let me tell you this morning, you are highly favored. You are God's favorite. Yes, you, baby girl. Yes, you, baby boy. You are God's favorite. And I know some of you are thinking, why is she calling me baby boy? Because I'm a lot older than her. No, because, right, for any parent, your baby girl and baby boy will always be baby girl and baby boy. And in God's eyes, we will always be God's children. And so God looks at us and says, "You are my baby boy. You are my baby girl. You are my favorite. I love you. You are highly favored, and I am with you." Maybe you've been walking with me all your life. Maybe you've just shown up to church today and just decided, I don't know, maybe there's something else to this Jesus thing. Doesn't matter how long or how short you've been. Doesn't matter the road that you've been. God still calls you highly favored. And just as the Lord was already with Mary before she ever said yes, the Lord is also with you. That's good news to me. I don't know about you, but that's all I need to know this morning, is that God's already with me, because I don't know what kind of stuff you've come in here this morning with. I don't know what kind of burdens you have on your shoulders. I don't know what kind of preoccupations you have, but God is already with you in those moments. some of us in this room might feel like, I'm God's favorite. What am I? I'm an average person. I just do my job and go home, take care of my family. Who am I? Or maybe you feel like, well, I'm not normal. I got all this other stuff. I've got this story that I wish I could tell you. But I'm the least likely to be called to change the kingdom. Or maybe you're like me, who's a little economically vulnerable, living paycheck to paycheck and prayer to prayer. Like, really, God, you sure you want to call me? Because I'm just trying to make it through each day. Maybe you feel marginalized, maybe because of your ethnic background, or because you're a woman, or because of several other kinds of intersections in your life that cause you to get further and further and further from what society would call normal or standard or privileged. And yet, many of us find ourselves in that same space with Mary, but she was called, as the Latin church would call it, Theotokos, the bearer of God. Okay, if there's anything I want on my business card, it is Theotokos. I want to be the bearer of God, because, you know, it doesn't matter who I think I am. It matters who my Creator thinks I am. Why would God choose someone like me to do such an important work for the kingdom? Maybe that's what you're asking. I'm not even 5 feet tall. I'm a brown girl who honestly gets overlooked pretty often. Many times I'm standing around with a group of friends, particularly when I'm with some tall friends. People will walk right by, say hi to them, and not even notice that I'm there. Who am I? Who am I? I can't run very far. Run very fast. Who am I? My mom worked at the post office in Seattle. My dad worked for the phone company. We're just this middle class family just trying to make it through the day. And you're going to call me a kingdom changer? And yet God says, greetings, Mary, you are highly favored. The Lord is with you. The power of the unexpected. By any account of that day, she had very little status as a woman. One of the lies of the enemy that we face is for the enemy to say, you're not the right person for the task. I'm too unexpected of a choice to be called something great. Moses said that. I'm not a great speaker. David and Joseph said that. I'm too young. Sarai and Elizabeth said, I'm too old. Mary's excuse was logistics. How am I supposed to do that if I haven't done that? She got stuck on logistics. Thankfully, the kids went off to kids' school, Sunday school. In every physical and scientific way, she was not at that time qualified to have a child. And yet, that does not stop God from being God. All throughout the scriptures, God shows favor to the unexpected choices. God shows a personal favoritism to those least likely, least equipped, least qualified. I don't know how many times I have to remind myself of the obstacles in front of me that doesn't mean anything to God. Right. But God, nope. But God, God still is God. Mary got stuck on the logistics. How can this be? How many of us hear God calling us to something and we get stuck on those logistics? How can this be? I don't have that kind of training and education. I don't know that language. I don't do things like that, God. I messed up so badly in my life before. I can't keep moving forward in the direction you're calling me to. And yet, it doesn't stop God from being God. When we get stuck on the logistics, God says, yeah, I know, it seems unexpected. You seem like an unexpected choice, but that's why I did that, because then I get the glory, right? So if I choose you, then people know that I'm in it. If you are unexpected and you feel unexpected, it's because I did that on purpose, because I want to show how great I am. When God chooses us far-fetched, unqualified, unlikely individuals to be the Theotokos, to be the bearer of God, we know that God favors us. And if we weren't unexpected enough, I find it interesting that God would choose the timing that God did, because we often look at her pregnancy during her betrothal as this necessary time to prove that she was a virgin. The Immaculate Conception was not about Mary at all. It was about Mary's mother. The Immaculate Conception was about Mary being born without sin. This is the, from the Catholic tradition. But for us Protestants, we see it as something else. We think it's in a way about God making something out of nothing. But think about this. Have we considered that God purposefully meant to have Mary pregnant at the time that would be suspicious in her relationship, to mess with what was considered legal and illegal? God could have done that on purpose. My suspicion is God did do that on purpose. Why would God put Mary in such a vulnerable and scandalous position to be pregnant before she was married? Why would he make her a single mom? We see later on in Jesus' life that he talks to women in prostitution and Samaritan women who was the wrong ethnicity. Those countercultural moves on his part. So if men and women didn't talk to those types of women, but Jesus did, it's not that far-fetched for me to look at God and think, oh yeah, maybe God did that on purpose to Mary. Maybe God decided, yeah, I'm going to make sure that she's not the right type. She's the unexpected. She has no title. That I will make her legally vulnerable. That I will make her financially vulnerable. That I will make her socially vulnerable. If it wasn't unexpected enough, God chose the timing of her pregnancy to put her in jeopardy of being stoned to death. If anyone decided that she was, in fact, an adulterer, that she did, in fact, have relations with Joseph before, or relations with someone else before she was married, they could have stoned her to death. God chose the timing at such a crucial point that the optics of Jesus' arrival would be so unexpected that it would have been hard to believe were it not God making this happen. So let's add some more to the plate. Mary was not just legally vulnerable, but she was also economically vulnerable. Back then, what would happen is if you were found to have maybe the husband-to-be didn't like the girl, maybe he thought that maybe she committed adultery, he could have returned her to the parents. Then she would be economically a burden on the parents once again. And she would no longer have the covering of a husband. This is important in Mary's story. The vulnerabilities kept her marginalized on so many levels. Sometimes God waits for us when we're at our most vulnerable before calling us to do great things. And so if you've come here this morning and felt like, I've got nothing, I'm just going to get my body to church and that's all I can do, it may be the time is ripe that God is calling you to do something great. Sometimes that's just so people can say, oh, that had to be God because there's no way Joyce could have done that on her own. I know Joyce. She can't do that kind of stuff. Sometimes I get myself, it's so that I get myself out of the way and I have nothing else to claim but God. The Apostle Paul says, my grace is sufficient for you, for my power is made perfect in my weakness. So Christ's power may rest on me. That is why for Christ's sake I delight in my weaknesses, in insults, in hardships, in persecutions, in difficulties. For when I am weak, then I am strong. God does great things for us when we are at our most vulnerable. And so Mary talks to her cousin Elizabeth, and she says, pass me the mic. Pass me the mic. I'm about to go in. I'm about to sing a new song. I'm about to sing a new song because I get it now. Maybe God's been calling you to something or promising something, and maybe it's been years, and you've maybe ignored it by this point. But Elizabeth, I love what Elizabeth said. She said, blessed is she, for she believed the Lord's promises for her. Today may be the time that you get unstuck from the logistics or obstacles that seem to be in your way, or unstuck from the lie that you're not ready or equipped to do the task. Mary believed that the Lord would fulfill his promises to her, and because she believed, she started singing her new song. That's what she went in. That song, that Magnificat, it's Mary's song. She sang a new tune, and the tune was, "Yes, and. Yes, I will give birth to Jesus, and." Each declaration was a declaration of justice that this baby Jesus would bring. Notice it's written in the past tense as if it has already been done, which means it is a prophetic song. It is a war cry. It is a cry against the darkness and the enemies attempting to make us forget that there is always hope in the name of the one we call Emmanuel. It's a song that says, yes, I will be the mother of Jesus, and he will bring light to the darkness, and his mercy extends to those who fear him, and he has scattered the proud in the imaginations of their hearts, and he has brought down the rulers and raised up those from the lowly places in society, and he will fill the hungry, and he will turn away the rich, and he will be merciful to his people, the people of Israel. Mary's war cry proclaimed, the first shall be last, and the last shall be first. Homeless people will be lifted up. The abused and the oppressed will be lifted up. The hungry will be fed. The orphaned will find family. The widows will find their covering. Those with disabilities and sicknesses will be healed. Those who are depressed will find joy. The marginalized will be centered. Righteousness will be restored because God chose to break into humanity and move into our neighborhood. Brothers and sisters, there is favor for us, the unexpected. We are being called to be the Theotokos of God, to go to our schools, to our workplaces, to our friends, to our communities. Some of us may have some specific assignments that God's been talking to us about, and it's time to believe that the Lord will fulfill his promises to us. It's time to step into our favor. It's time to walk into our favor. It's time to sing a new song and get the mic. Come on, Joyce. Maybe you've been singing the same song for a while and you got to do a remix. Maybe you've been bored with that song. Figure out a remix. And not just the song, a war cry that uplifts and empowers the poor and the vulnerable and the oppressed. It's time to remember that you are highly favored and that the Lord is with you. Go forth and be Theotokos. Be the bearers of God. Be encouraged that you are God's favorite and that the Lord is with you. Amen.